Women of the Ilenca ethnia chained themselves together to protest at Honduras police offices in Tegucigalpa in demand for justice for murdered indigenous leader and ecologist Berta Cáceres. During the picketing, the daughter of the murdered social activist called on authorities to throw light on her mother's homicide, which she considers intimidation and an attempt to bring down the Civic Council of Indigenous and Popular Organizations and derail the defense of the rights of these people in Honduras.
Brazilian President Dilma Rousseff reiterated Sunday that she will not resign from office. Her comments came in response to an editorial in the daily Folha de São Paulo calling for her resignation. To the editorial in the Folha de São Paulo published Sunday, this response from the president prevails. "I will never give up," reads a message published on President Rousseff's official Facebook profile. The message was published along with a video with excerpts from several previous speeches of the president, assuring that she will not leave her post. In the statements, Rousseff also reiterates a top...
And hello. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
Gad, the heat.
It's the hot season.
Yes, that's what causes it. I hope to God it's not curry again tonight.
It always is.
It's the only damn thing they can cook in this godforsaken country. Care for a whiskey?
Fire water.
Yes, quite, quite. Cup of tea.
It takes 2 hours to get cool enough to drink.
Yes. We'll fancy a game of cards.
No, it's too hot for that.
Yeah. Well, there must be some little thing I can tempt you with.
Too hard for that.
Yes, true, 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 yes. Thinking about it, I think you're right. Still, it's nice thinking about it. I think I'll have a gin. Look at the damn filthy state of this place. Look at all these glasses. Where's that damn filthy swine of a houseboy? Mahmoud, come on in here. Where the devil are you, boy? There you are, you damn beggar. Now listen to me. Big Colonel Massa want all same great big gin tinkle, understand? All same full up top, big, big overflowing, very little tonic water. Now you don't sit about outside on your big fat veranda. You come in here and clear up all same glasses and all same living hut, you understand? Or Big Colonel Massa will give you all same sack and a big bag to put it in. You'll be all same out on your big all same ear. Savvy?
It's all the same to me, dear.
Must be nearer the border than I thought.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight for indigenous rights.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Yeah.
are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Rindigina.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he get it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for the heart of the region.
Este es Aboriginal Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Good, Buffy. We've almost got it.
Yes. When are you off to America?
I'm going in the next couple of days, actually, so I thought I'd better brush up my Star Spangled Banner.
Yes.
Well, you have to. You have to be able to play that, otherwise they won't give you a visa. Terribly sticky about them. Toscanini waited for years and years.
Mind you, you can see their point of view. If they didn't have these regulations, any old riffraff could get in.
Yes. They've got a lot of riffraff there already, haven't they?
That's the first thing that will strike you.
No, Buffy, the first thing that will strike you about the Americans is they're not English.
Well, of course they're not English, they're American.
Now, what I mean is they're not English, they're not of English stock. I mean, you only have to look at the names, Lefkowitz, Ribblewitz, Vaseline, those aren't English names.
They used to be.
No, they never were.
I mean, they used to be very good English stock, though, Anglo-Saxons.
Puritan.
Exactly, yes, it was the Statue of Liberty that started the rot.
How was that?
Well, you see, they put out the statue, and I mean, it's a lovely statue.
Well, it's a beautiful statue.
Some idealistic Johnny went and inscribed on the bottom all this business about, give me your poor, your huddled masses. Well, of course, people did. The huddled masses leapt at the opportunity. They came over in droves.
Bred like rabbits,
died like flies.
And spread like wildfire. The whole place was swamped.
Isn't there a very serious colour problem over there?
Yes, there is, but you won't have any difficulty.
I think there is a very real danger of seeing the colour problem simply in terms of black and white.
It is a lot more complicated than that.
But I gather the Negroes are sweeping the country.
Yes, so they are. It's about the only job they can get.
Very well, they do it too.
And what's all this black muslin I hear they're wearing?
No, Buffy, they're not wearing it, they're joining it. It's a movement rather than a cloth. Of course, Buffy, one thing you will notice about America, and that it's a very young country, rather like Ghana in that respect.
Of course, they have inherited our two-party system, haven't they?
How does that work?
Well, let me see now. They've got the Republican Party, you'll see, which is the equivalent of our Conservative Party, and then there's the Democratic Party, which is the equivalent of our Conservative Party. And then, of course, there are the Liberals in the shape of people like, Yes.
Are the Liberals Democrats or Republicans?
Yes. I mean, as is convenient for them.
Oh, I see, yes. course, you know, the Americans must be frightfully jealous of our royal family.
Right. Except there is a sense in which the Queen is the President and the Prime Minister all rolled into one.
One what?
Exactly. That's the whole dilemma of the American Constitution.
Mind you, I think he's doing an awfully good job. Very cultivated fellow, too.
Very cultivated.
Yes, I understand he's taking steps to federalize the avant-garde.
What a exciting concept. Of course, Buffy, one thing you will notice about the Americans, God bless them, that's they're terribly naive about sex.
In what way?
Exactly.
They're terribly naive about it. I mean, they think of sex in terms of beautiful blonde women with huge breasts, pink skin, blue eyes.
Pathetic.
Absolutely pathetic. How do you think of sex?
I don't, actually. At least I try not to. Otherwise, I start thinking of beautiful blonde women with huge breasts and pink skin.
Pathetic.
Of course, you have to admire the Americans. You know, they really do have something to believe in. You see, they really do believe in anti-communism.
I think. God, I wish we had a positive faith like that in England. You know,
give us something to hold on to. Times of stress.
Yeah. Isn't there a lot of poverty over there?
There is, but luckily it's all been concentrated in the slum areas. It's beautifully done. You'd scarcely notice it.
Where are you going in America?
I'm going to New York first.
Well, of course, you must remember, New York isn't America.
What is it then?
New York is New York, but it's not America.
It's not America. If you want to see America, you ought to go to the South.
South's charming, but it's not America.
It's not America, no.
Now, there's Washington, of course. And that's got a certain sort of Parisian atmosphere. It's certainly not America.
It's not America. Of course, Los Angeles is fascinating, but it's not America any more than San Francisco, and that's not America.
There's the West, of course. Now, that's very exciting.
Very exciting.
It's not America.
It's not America.
And there's the North. North America, but that's Canada. I mean, not America.
Not America.
Where is America?
The Cape, I think.
Massachusetts.
Yes. Yeah. That's just a little bit of England.
That's America.
Este es aborigen inteligente de radio.
Internet radio for smart aboriginals.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the fourth world from within occupied North America, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along, Salaton and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. You have tuned in to Indigenous news, thought, and analyses concerning issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living under colonial, imperial, theological, racialist, homophobic, misogynist, neoclassist, neoliberal, neoliteral, neo-fascist, and pro-capitalist anti-environmental oppression. I'm your host, the Angry Indian, Editor-in-Chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the fourth world from aboriginalnewswire.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com and our main news portal, ang-newswire.blogspot.com. And along with my executive co-producer and master studio engineer, Ms. Guadalupe Morales, we welcome you back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, the official broadcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service. I mean, really, you know, maybe I'm just getting burned out. It's happened before. I'm just getting tired. You know, you just get dog tired of politics. You just, because it just seems so much like it's not going any fucking where. You know, I don't even know specifically what we had a few things Loopy and I had discussed that I'd go over, but yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, how personal I should get about this, because I'm on Twitter, of course. Aboriginal Press, our news feed is the @, right? One word, Aboriginal Press, one word, like everything else on Twitter. But yeah, Aboriginal Press. I mean, do you want to get our news feeds from the blogs I just mentioned earlier, news feeds, really, I should say, they're not really blogs. yeah, check us out there at Aboriginal Press. My Twitter feed is The Angry Indian. And, of course, it's that sign for those of you who are still getting used to the Internet. And I'm saying it like that because there are a lot of people who are still getting used to the Internet. A lot of elders out there, right? And a lot of people who, for whatever reason, it does have a hard time getting a grasp of these things. And it is what it is. But The Angry Indian. Because there's a lot of angry Indians, but there's only one The Angry Indian. And yeah, what was it, Luke? My blog, right? AboriginalWriter.wordpress.com. Again, one word, AboriginalWriter.wordpress.com. Yeah, I know, we're supposed to mention these things more often, but we don't. I'm sorry, I'm not into self-promotion very much. But today I'm going to talk about myself at least for a little bit, because it's just really getting me how... what's that, Luke? Yeah, people are getting really shady. Yeah, and it's supposed to be the people on the left, right? You know, and it's like, look, I've said this before. I certainly agree with the politics of the left. I do not like the goddamn right. But you're dealing with me in this left-right, dynamic. This it's a Eurocentric paradigm to begin with. And especially in the U.S., it's this real fucking dividing line, except when you actually get to the upper echelons of power, influence, and economic status, then being a Democrat, being Republican really doesn't matter that much. You know, at that point, it's just a matter of, well, I belong to this group, I belong to that one. You know. I mean, it's like the Killsfall Road in Northern Ireland. Did I pronounce that right? Kills Falls, right? That main road. On one side, you got the Unionists. On the other side, you got the Irish. Yes, I know the Unionists are Irish, but they don't want to be. They want to be British. Which, you know, technically, depending on if you want to separate, you know, that particular island from the rest of it, you know, you can make an argument. They can make an argument. I'm not Irish, so I don't have a dog in the fucking fight. You know, for me, it's a colonialist exercise, and it's something worth studying, which is why we pay attention to what happens in Ireland. We pay attention to that situation. We pay attention to Michael Collins over here, because as indigenous people, this is a colonialist issue. When we talk about Palestine, when we talk about the occupation of Palestine by the Jewish state in the Levant, otherwise known as the State of Israel, we're talking about a colonialist situation. That's why we mentioned it. Yes, this is a matter of justice. Of course. Just simple human justice. Genocide is a violation of human justice. Well, we pay attention to Palestine for the simple fact that Palestine is an indigenous situation. Now, can we make an argument that you always hear the revisionist Zionists make? Well, there is no such thing as an indigenous Palestinian. Well, that depends on how you're defining indigenous. It really depends on how you're defining it. And, you know, for those of you who are aware of this, I'm not saying anything that's new, but I bet you that the majority of you who are listening, especially first timers, have no clue about this. The United Nations, the governing, body of discourse, of diplomacy for the planet. I mean, of course, it set itself up like that. I mean, how else could it happen, right? You had the League of Nations. Then the United States got involved. I mean, really got involved. Because Woodrow Wilson called for the League of Nations, of course. But I mean, when they realized what they could do with this, then it became the United Nations. You understand what I'm saying? And any vote the United States makes is a veto for every fucking thing else. I mean, you can have... What? I mean, was it 242? You keep hearing a lot of revisionist Zionists bring up about the State of Israel and its dealings. Where they like to use neighbors when they're being polite. But the people they're trying to fucking rub the fuck out, you know, otherwise known as our indigenous Palestinian brothers and sisters. I mean, look, my wife is a Christian Palestinian. And, you know, frankly, many of her family can trace themselves, you know, to Syria. Now, we're going back like fucking three, maybe four generations. She has relatives that are buried in Palestine. You understand what I'm saying? Buried in Palestine. So, you know, motherfucking... What's that? Yeah, well, yeah, she's a Christian. So she grew up in the Christian... Well, she didn't grow up over there. She's from fucking L.A. But her family is from the Christian section. So they were part of the intelligentsia. They were the educated ones, right? You know, they had some land holdings and all that kind of shit. So, you know, when everything turned over, they didn't end up as bad as, say, what's going on in the West Bank, what's going on in the Gaza. You know, and yeah, there's a different culture. I mean, I know there's a lot of fucking really dummy Islamophobes out there that don't even realize that there's Christian Arabs. You know, their whole thing about their Lord and Savior, though, the fact that he's a Palestinian, and that's my brother Bob Kincaid, and you really need to be checking out his show. Head on Radio. The Horn, as they put it, right? Beaming to you straight up out of Appalachia, man. Real fucking radio. We talk about the Irish, he talks about the Scots-Irish, and he talks about how the Scots-Irish, after they were sent to England, after they were taken out of Scotland, sent to Ireland, right? Talk about the Ulster, you know, Ulstermen, right? They don't consider themselves part of any goddamn thing. They're from Ulster, right? You know, somebody who was very inebriated and very fucking serious and was very intent on telling me this several fucking years ago. Wanted me to know, what am I saying? It's more than several years ago. We're going like 20 some odd years ago. He wanted me to know that he was from Ulster. And he's like, you know, what's going on between these fucking Brits and these goddamn, you know, terrorists? And so he goes, that has nothing to do with Ulster. And then, you know, broke down his thing. Made me listen to him. So, you know, I mean, there's all sorts of divisions out there that are really fucking with me, which, again, is why I have no agenda with this. You know, I'm trying to figure out why the political system in the United States, in the fucking UK, you just had the Panama Papers released, right? So you have one PM in Iceland. He's gone. He's already been replaced this morning. Peru is shaking things up in Peru. David Cameron's father directly, his family, you know, by extension, is connected to this. Zuma, I believe, is on the list. There's Americans on the list, too, and some of it leads to the Clinton Foundation. So, you know, I mean, is anybody really fucking surprised about this? Is anybody really fucking surprised about this? You know, it's amazing to me because you have the Panama Papers. This is leading into where I was going before I went on a tangent. You know, here you have the Panama Papers released to a German newspaper that I don't read that often, frankly. I mean, could they really talk about what's going on in Germany? So I don't really look at that unless I'm trying to check out, say, like, was that it? What the fuck was his name? Heinz Fromm. Okay, sorry about that. When Heinz Fromm, who was the head of the their federal domestic investigation department, I suppose, for the states would be the FBI special branch, I would think, you know, MI5, well, MI5 would be the equivalent I could think of and understand the best. The protectors of the, I don't have the data in front of me because I wrote about it and then lost the goddamn draft. But anyway, I was writing about the mayhem that was going on in Germany about 10 years ago, where there was some Turks that were murdered. I mean, there was a bunch of terrorism, some banks that were robbed. That was done by a neo-Nazi gang, really. I mean, it's hard to say that they were even political. They didn't do politics. They were just doing racism and crime. And probably doing drugs, too, and fucking each other. Betty Schaap, that name I remember. She's the female that's in court now. I mean, I believe the case is still ongoing. But anyway, it turns out that their intelligence service, their domestic fucking intelligence service, decided to not do anything about these bastards for 10 years. And in fact, even supplied them, because they did a few bombings, that actually supplied them with the material in which to do these fucking crimes. You know, firearms, explosive materials, and probably even, you know, intelligence, you know, personal data about people who they were targeting. So, yeah. Now, he said that he didn't know anything about it. Here's a career fucking intelligence officer that's been, at the head of that department for more than several years, if I understand correctly. Left under a fucking cloud. They allowed him to slip out. And it really wasn't quiet because it was all over the press, the fact that the domestic fucking intelligence services didn't do a goddamn thing about a neo-Nazi gang that was tearing up, I believe it was West Levant. And don't put it on the screen, because then I'll get caught up in that. I started writing about this because I'm like, wait, you know, what the fuck? You know, I mean, the same thing could be said here about the FBI. I mean, what happened with Gary Francis Rowe in the 1960s? In, what was it, the Mississippi Klan, the Alabama Klan? Because I know he was involved with several of them. He was an FBI motherfucking informant. He was the G-man that they turned, I think. I don't think they sent him in. You know, I think they turned on him. But it's possible that they recruited him and sent him in. No, actually, they had to recruit him and send him in because he had to join the Klan. He actually had to make his bones. And he was involved in cross burnings. He was involved in beatings. He was involved in at least one house burning. According to his own... No, wait a minute, was it a house burning or a house torching? Yeah, according to his own fucking testimony. This can be looked up. This is part of the motherfucking judicial record. Why am I saying this? Because he was part of the fucking prosecution's case during the goddamn Goodman, Swerner, and Cheney. Cheney, Goodman, and Swerner case. You know, because they always put the brother last. You notice that, right? James Cheney. They always put him last. And yeah, you know, I'm in a bad mood, so I'm stumbling over, you know, a lot of my thoughts here. But well, yeah, Lube, I was starting to say I was in a bad mood, and now I got onto this. So let me finish this. All right. So Gary Francis Rowe was the FBI's man. This is J. Edgar Hoover's FBI. Well, J. Edgar Hoover and Clyde Tolson's FBI, since they were married and they ran this motherfucker as a couple. And they ran it as a household, meaning they did whatever the fuck they wanted to do. You know, Bob Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, for those of you too young, John F. Kennedy's brother, who was the attorney general when he became president. Yeah, that sounds kind of shaky, but he actually did his goddamn job. You know, for the most part, right? I mean, he was also wiretapping illegally Dr. King, the Black Panthers, the fucking Malcolm X and his family. But that wiretapping, he gave all sorts of motherfucking leeway in terms of telling Jacob Hoover, you can wiretap all the fuck you want as long as you're doing it with these niggas. And I know for you, for those of you who are Kennedy and Clinton fans, because that's where all this shit is leading. What's that? Yeah, that's where all of this is leading. You know, because you know, people who are really, really down with JFK and really into the whole Camelot thing, it's really hard to fucking tell them that Kennedy was not all that they thought he was. You understand? He was still trying to assassinate Dr. Fidel Castro in Cuba. They were still, he still went forward with the Bay of Pigs. It's just that he let the CIA sit in their own motherfucking juice, right? Because he really wasn't for, I mean, he inherited that from Eisenhower. And I respect, you know, the legacy of Dwight Eisenhower, but at the same goddamn time, you know, he was anti-communist and got this whole, you know, fucking machine going in terms of, you know, war and the economy, you know, the sort of Keynesian economy we're running on now. Like every other human being on the motherfucking planet, he can be criticized for, you know, being fucked up in a lot of his goddamn decisions. Well, you know, I'm hearing a lot of that about Sanders, and people are really getting that goddamn nasty about it, which is where I'm leading to this. Because Hoover was Hoover was a fucking pig. You know, he was gay his goddamn self, living up there pretty much in the fucking open with his goddamn husband running the fucking FBI. I mean, we gotta admit, he built it. You know, he took it from the General Investigative Division and made it the Federal Bureau of Investigation. It was his baby because he didn't have any other goddamn kids because he was gay. And, you know, he never paid his fucking own mortgage. You paid it, taxpayer. He never paid for a fucking meal. His gangster friends and homies and his boyfriends and shit were paying for that, you know, these things. He was crooked to the, you know, all the way up to the fucking gills. Right? He allowed, J. Edgar Hoover allowed the mafia What we know is the mafia, organized crime, the syndicate, the mob, whatever the fuck you want to call it. To become nationwide, to the point where we got what the fuck we got now. Now, you know, the Italian mafia, they're not like what they used to be. But don't think that they didn't spawn offshoots. I mean, come on, like I said, when I complain about trying to find a movie that's not violent, I mean, it's all gangster. If it's not intelligence, James Bond, Jason Bourne type, you know, bollocks, it's fucking crime. It's just crime. Guns every motherfucking where, and with the rest of it is war. Right? Or it's what they call family programming, which is basically trying to sell you a goddamn, you know, series of products and shit and a breakfast cereal. Yeah, you know. Roll with me. I know I'm on a couple of tangents here. I'm on several, actually. But, you know, roll with me. What I'm really trying to get to is, you know, you have unintended consequences for a lot of shit, and you have people who really don't look at what the fuck is happening because they want to see what the fuck they want to see. For example, you know, you get the Republicans who, you know, they're just nitpicking little fucking children. And they're like, well, he said, she said, this, that, and the other. And you're taking away my rights. And you ever notice that people who want to quote rights all the goddamn time are the people who violate rights all the fucking time and want to deny other people rights all the time? You know, I mean, think about this shit. Think about this. Somebody who always wants to quote the fucking rules. Well, I got a right to do that. I got a right to do that. When they violate the fucking rules in decent, you know, thought processes and this Cartesian common sense every fucking moment that they're fucking alive. Because they're self-centered and selfish. They want what the fuck they want, and they just don't give a fuck about any goddamn buddy else. And they will cheat and steal and bitch and whine and do all kinds of fucking things to get attention until they get what the fuck they want. Now, when I say conservative, you got to remember something. You know, language has been jaundiced in the United States. People have been dumbed down and have not argued against this. They've ate their fucking McDonald's and kept fucking going. You know, and they got hooked up in these movies and shit and cineplexes and 12 goddamn movie theaters and one fucking structure in a mall to sell your kinds of crap. We're not thinking any fucking more. Conservative means exactly what the fuck it is. You can be a conservative goddamn Democrat and you can be a liberal fucking Republican. You know, and it's like people in the U.S. just have their politics all fucked up. They don't know a goddamn thing about fucking politics, and it's difficult, having been born and raised here, to really have to fucking deal with people, you know, who have never left the United States, let alone lived anywhere for any extended period of time. You know, they don't know, you know, it's like, okay, well, you know, I live in a town with 515 people, so the way it is over here, my farming community, that's the exact same way New York is, or that's the exact same way Miami is, or that's the exact same way Chicago is, or Seattle. Because I was the center of the fucking world. And see, it's that type of, you know, cultural and environmental. And when I say, I'm not talking about the environment per se. We're going to get to that too. But, you know, where you are. You know, we're all trapped in our time and space. And I know people who are not into physics and shit, it's real hard to talk about space and time and space-time. And, yeah, I know that now there's quantum waves. I'm going to go on a tangent. Look. What I'm trying to say is, it's really fucking getting me on how many supposed lefties in the U.S. have all of a sudden decided that Bernie Sanders is a dirty communist Jew, okay, who's trying to prevent Hillary Clinton from getting what she deserves. Because this is what I'm getting out of people, black, white, and otherwise. That, you know, Bernie Sanders is this terrible goddamn evil man who, you know, Hillary Clinton just yesterday, I understand, has accused Bernie Sanders of, you know, being the main force behind all of the mass shootings in the United States because he's not anti-gun. You know, I just mentioned him, Bob Kincaid. He said he doesn't fuck with him anymore, but he is legal gun owner, right? Mike Malloy, legal gun owner. You can't get too much more motherfucking legitimately left in the United States. What did he say? Yeah, I'm not beefing with Mike Malloy. That shit was just stupid. You know, he got caught. He was just... Well, actually, we can talk about that too because, you know, what am I saying? Americans don't want to hear fucking criticism. You know, he used to answer my emails, right? And it's like that, you know, he got really fucking snarky one night with everybody. because, because this cat, well, that you weren't with me yet, but you said you heard the show, you remember. Someone from Blue used to call him pretty regularly from Australia, and they always got along. But this one fucking call, he turned on Blue. He did. He turned on him because Blue was criticizing the United States. And then he was like, well, you have no right to criticize my country when you don't live here. And, you know, and people were writing in talking about, yeah, these people don't know the United States. But, you know, wait a fucking minute, though. The U.S. and Mike Malloy in particular will sit and criticize other fucking countries every time he does this goddamn show, every fucking day of the week. He calls the leader in North Korea crazy. I don't know if he's fucking insane. All I know is that Kim Jong-il, whatever the fuck it is, he was born and raised under the last goddamn dictator in a closed fucking society. And when I say closed society, I mean if they got porno, they have to make it. You understand? They can't get anything from the fucking outside. And, you know, the U.S. and shit is still trying to starve them to death. And technically, the U.S. is still fucking at war with them. There's a DMZ over there, if you don't know. You know, go to Wikipedia or do a Google or whatever fucking search engine you like. Duck and go. You know, whatever it is. Go look it the fuck up. Educate your motherfucking self. We're still at war with North Korea. Right? So, you know, this is a closed fucking society. What the fuck does he know? He knows what the fuck he's told and everything he's seen. Does that make him crazy? No, it makes him a product of his motherfucking environment. But I don't get that kind of analysis from Malloy. And like I said, I still listen to his show, you know, when I get around to it. And I respect the man. But, you know, I responded to what he said. I asked him to explain himself. You know, what the fuck is going on, man? You're going to say that, you know, this place can't be criticized, but the U.S. can criticize every place else? How many world leaders, Luke, how many world leaders in other, you know, countries has Mike Malloy, you know, flat out insulted? You know, and I don't know if he's been to Australia. I don't know if he's been to Russia. I mean, what does he say? I mean, what, look at the shit he says about Putin. Putin, again, is a fucking, you know, direct result of his fucking environment. He grew up in the Soviet Union. You can tell that he's a fucking bully. You can tell that, I mean, we all know that he got his goddamn hands dirty in the fucking KGB. So, you know, why are we surprised with the KGB links to organized crime in Russia, which is way worse than the motherfucking mafia here? Believe that. Okay? Their mafia is full of, you know, mostly it's like 70-80% Jews. Why? Because like the Barukamen in Japan, and if you don't know about the Barukamen, look it up. Just spell it phonetically, put Japan, comma, you'll find out. They're a subgroup in Japan. You know, they don't look any different than anybody else. They don't have a different DNA. But they're the descendants of the people who were the leather tanners. Because, you know, you got to use urine. It's a smelly, dirty goddamn job. Who cleaned out latrines. They had the worst job. They were on the socially on the lowest goddamn level. So who do you think makes up the majority of the Yakuza? 70-80% of the Yakuza, this is their motherfucking figures, not mine, are made up of the Barukamen. Because they can't do it. I mean, the name Barukamen, you know, I mean, you hear that, you can get a divorce on the spot. And what does Yakuza mean? It's a losing hand in Japanese card games. So, you know, the losers is what they're calling themselves. So who would make up their ranks? But people who are socially nondescript, on the motherfucking bottom, the losers. Well, it's the same thing in Russia. You know, you have these ethnic minorities, you have the folks from Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, what happened, right? You got ethnic Georgians like Stalin. You turned around and killed a bunch of fucking Georgians. You know, Holodomor. How many fucking people were killed doing Holodomor? So, you know, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Somebody will correct me if I'm not. Look that up. You want to talk about genocides? You know, I mean, he pretty much purposely starved these people the fuck out. But that's not who, you know, the anti-communists talk about. See, if the Republicans were smart, if they were smart, they would bring up J. Edgar Hoover, who was a Democrat, and say, hey, J. Edgar Hoover was a Democrat. Look at how terrible he was. You know, and he was a faggot, and he was a racist, and look what he did to Dr. King, and sent him a suicide letter, and how many people were probably assassinated on the COINTELPRO and set up on the COINTELPRO. Okay, why don't they do that? They don't do that. Why? Because everything that they're about is what fucking J. Edgar Hoover did. You understand what I'm saying? So they don't bring that up. They're not going to bring up what they consider to be an attribute. They don't bring that up. See, they go back and talk about Lincoln because they can win the moral argument, even though we all goddamn know that the majority of fucking Democrats came from the white racist South. Right? Follow me now. They came from the white racist South. It didn't matter really what political party they belonged to. They were products of their environment. If you were white and you lived in the fucking South, you were a Democrat. Period. Period. George Wallace is what fucked that up. See, when he realized that racism would get him goddamn elected as a Democrat, they don't bring up George Wallace, do they? They don't bring it up. Because they're pro-segregation. They don't bring it up. See, they'll accuse you as a Democrat in the United States of being a member of the Klan. Because all Democrats are Klan members, including the head of the Democratic Party, right? Which would, you know, to be the titular head, which is Barack Obama. A black man is the head of the fucking Ku Klux Klan, America's number one terrorist organization. So they want to win the moral ground. So they accuse the Dems of being part of the Klan. But the thing about it is, all you have to do is some goddamn research and get the partisan shit out of your fucking head that, you know, you want to win that moral high ground, even though you know you're a racist fucking pig. And you quote Lincoln, and you'll bring up the fact that, you know, the Klan started in the, you know, antebellum South, right? You know, as a white reaction against, you know, black people not supposedly being property any goddamn. Nobody talked about Indians, but, you know, not being white folks' property anymore, and the social ramifications of that, and the economic ramifications of that. Dig what I'm saying? See, there's no real analysis on this, because, you know, Stoicism says that the Democratic Party is exactly the way it is today that it always was, which it isn't. Now, of course, most Democrats know this, but most Democrats today don't even realize and know the racist history of the motherfucking party. So the Republicans will, again, falsely go to the past while forgetting, you know, that Barry Goldwater came around and said, hey, segregation now, segregation forever. See, this is who Hillary Clinton was supporting. She was a Goldwater girl. She doesn't deny this. You know, my mother-in-law denies this. You know, most of the Democrats that I'm complaining about right now deny this. But the reality is, Hillary Clinton is from the South. So, of course, Hillary Clinton did well in the South. She's also a conservative Democrat by her own fucking admission. She was a conservative when she was fucking around with Barry Goldwater. By her own admission. She's from the South. So, of course, the majority of black people down there who are used to still saying ma'am and yes sir to motherfucking white people and still can't look a white man in the eye in a lot of goddamn cases voted for Hillary Clinton. Why are you surprised? I'm not motherfucking surprised. I mean, you got Mega Evers' fucking surviving brother here backing Trump. I'm not surprised. He's from the South. If Trump can bring him a job, he's fine with it. He'll vote for anybody that give him a job, but he'll also vote for somebody that will keep the environment that he was somewhat used to intact. Because he was used to living in segregated shit. I'm not saying he didn't fight against it. His brother died because of it. But they were trying to eat. They were trying to maintain themselves. They were trying to lessen the motherfucking tension. But if white people lived on one side of the road and black people lived on the other, I don't really think too many folks would have given a fuck. It's denying somebody fucking education. It's denying somebody a goddamn job. It's denying somebody the right to go downtown on the fucking weekend. It's telling you who the fuck you can be friends with. Who you can fuck. how far you can go when you know that you can fucking hit, you can take it to the goddamn limit, but they're telling you, no, you're not gonna fucking do that because a white man has that spot. See, motherfuckers had never really sat and talked to a lot of black people who were not superstars in the motherfucking civil rights movement. See, this is why Representative John Lewis, that shit he said about Bernie Sanders was fucked up and some coon shit. That was coonery. You understand? How the fuck you gonna say, well, I didn't see him? There's a whole lot of people you didn't see. You saw Hillary Clinton out there? When she was stumping for Barry Goldwater? Did you see her out there? Where was Bill? Bill's like every other white boy in Arkansas. He fucking took all the privileges and shit and enjoyed his life. He wasn't thinking about no goddamn nigga. What the fuck are you talking about? That's like people who believe that the Kennedys was love black people. Are you stupid? That's what I'm saying. Motherfuckers will quote Malcolm X all goddamn day long, but don't analyze what the fuck he was saying. He pointed out that meeting with the Big Six that most people over 40 fucking know about. That included King and Ralph Abernathy and fucking forgot who else was there right now. James Farmer and all those motherfuckers, those old school motherfuckers, and told them, we're going to give you $250,000. And then, you know, about a year from now, we'll give you $250,000 more for you, for the programs that you want. But here's the deal. A. Philip Randolph and that communist faggot, Byard Rustin, they got a motherfucking, this is the Kennedy brother speaking now, they got a protest going on here in D.C. and we can't have it. They want to put your people, because they were not following King. Most people did not even know King outside of the fucking South. Okay? And D.C. is in the South, but you know what I'm saying. So, motherfucking, he said you can't allow them to shut down the motherfucking airport over here, which is what they had initially planned to do. You can't allow them to shut up the grid down here, which is what they intended to motherfucking do. They were going to shut D.C. down. No fucking cars were going to move. No motherfucking planes were taking off the landing. They were going to shut it down. They wanted freedom now. Fannie Mae Hamer and the rest of them, this is what they had initially intended to do. They were going to flood D.C. with black people and white supporters and take over the fucking city. And not let a goddamn thing move. No trains, no vehicles, no planes, no nothing. They were going to lay out on the tarmac. They were going to lay in their bodies in the street to prevent traffic. This is what the fuck they had initially planned to do. Now remember, Bay Rustin was a communist. And yes, he was a homosexual and he should be respected for being a black man and being openly fucking gay in the late goddamn 50s and 60s. He and his partner at that time, because he went to the joint by Rustin for not adhering to the draft. He refused. He went in and just told him, fuck you. I mean, instead of just saying he'd be a conscientious objector, which he probably did, and they said, no, nigga, you're going. And then he got political on him. And then they said, okay, motherfucker, you're going to the Who's Guy. And they took his ass in. And when they found out he was gay, I'm pretty sure that was another reason to hold him. You dig what I'm saying? But in any case, he was a radical. He's what we today call a radical, right? And but he was the type of radical that was the cool radical. See, he liked to fuck your system up, but he didn't want to hurt anybody in the means of doing it. And he didn't hurt any goddamn buddy. By Rustin never hurt any motherfucking buddy. He might have talked your goddamn ears off, but, you know, he didn't fucking hurt anybody. And the Kennedy brothers were like, you can't let these two motherfuckers do this. Now, A. Philip Randolph was the head of the Sleeping Porters Union. Now, these were the black men that sold you your motherfucking cream of wheat and shit and your coffee on those goddamn trains. You know, Malcolm did that. Several of my relatives did that on the Pullman line. I mean, that was one of the better jobs a black man could get in the United States. You know, steady work for a while and see the country and all that. Anyway, let me not go on that tangent. My point is, the Kennedy brothers said, look, man, we'll pay you motherfuckers off to basically take over the motherfucking movie. Right? Because James Farmer from CORE was probably the only person most of these rank and file brothers and sisters would have known. And, you know, they're like, you got to take it over because we know that you'll do a bus boycott, but you won't do anything like this. So take it over. King wasn't even slated to speak at that goddamn event. Do the fucking research. Speak to people who are actually involved, who are not in front of a fucking camera, who are not goddamn, you know, giving radio interviews and reading the newspaper every motherfucking week. Speak to people who are really in the fucking movement. The majority of them just wanted a goddamn job. They didn't care what white people called and all that kind of shit. They just wanted motherfucking work. And then you had others that were much more motherfucking radical who said, look, man, you know, King ain't moving fast enough. Even though we know now that Dr. King and Malcolm X were actually working together. They were attacking the problem from two fronts. Malcolm was making it international and talking about the militant end. And then you had Dr. King, who was moving towards the militant fucking center. As much as Malcolm was moving towards the more political left as he became more internationalized. See, Dr. King, and I, again, have said this, I have wrongly, inaccurately criticized Dr. King for being soft. He was not soft. See, I was listening to, you know, the version that was given by white folks, because their version says that he loved everybody and that he loved white people more than he loved black people, and that he wanted love, not justice. See, you know, so no, you know, and again, you know, all of this goes back to, you know, environment, history, what have you. I was raised in an environment during a time period where we were told that, you know, after everything was dead, you know, was said and done, and I'm in school after MLK has been assassinated now, and learning, you know, their version of events, and then, you know, find, you know, I grew up with that. It wasn't until I found out later because of the internet where you can get these other sources. This doesn't mean you should believe everything out there. I mean, if you believe in Dr. Sebi, you're a motherfucking idiot. You know, you're a fucking idiot. You're sending your money to a fucking charlatan or any of these other cancer cures, AIDS cures. They don't work. They're stealing your fucking money. You know, the Hoteps are playing on you to steal your motherfucking money. Don't do it. But where I'm going with this is you have the American fucking left here that is so establishment and doesn't realize that they're the establishment. I've already seen some stupid ass fucking tweets where people are saying that Bernie Sanders represents the establishment and here's Hillary Clinton trying to make change. It's like, are you fucking stupid? He's not taking money from the fossil fuel industry. Maybe not their lobbyists. If people who work there give him some money, fine. Nobody ever became president here without being supported by somebody in big business. So you know, so what? He fucking, you know, I mean, really? Especially since it's already been fucking cleared out. You can go to factcheck.org. You have all of these, ballotpedia.org. There's all of these fucking watchdog groups that use the congressional and Senate fucking records on votes that list them out. And if you don't believe them, you can call off to the motherfucking government servers and look at the shit for your goddamn self. You know, who's active, who isn't, what the fuck they voted on. No, Bernie Sanders is not anti-gun. And the argument that he's making, and I'm sorry, but it's a logical motherfucking argument. The gun manufacturers are fucked up. But like any fucking thing else, they're producing a fucking product. Now, what people do with the fucking product is another thing. Now, they produce these things to be lethal. There is no fucking surprise here. It's not like R.J. Reynolds producing cigarettes and saying that they're safe. Now, as far as I'm aware, the gun manufacturers are not making that sort of a motherfucking argument. Now, the NRA, of course, says that, you know, guns are safer than, you know, baby spit. But they'll always say that because they're lobbyists. And, of course, they work for the motherfucking gun companies. Of course, this is what's happening. But the thing about it is, if they're selling the shit legally and people are out here doing crime with them, his argument is you can't sue the manufacturer. Now, you can definitely get the gun store, you can get the in-between shit, but you can't get them for manufacturing the motherfucking guns, especially since they're manufacturing these things to kill. So, you know, there's no big goddamn surprise about what the fuck they're doing. They're manufactured to kill people. So it really doesn't fucking, you know. Now, my argument is, we should debate him on that. We should definitely call him to the fucking carpet for that. We should definitely be in his fucking face saying, no, what are you really doing here by supporting this industry in this way? Now, I've made the argument that the people of Vermont that he's supposedly, you know, is representing that, you know, they're not gun crazy. At least not as far as I'm aware. I'm not from Vermont. It's been many, many fucking decades since I've been there. You know, but, you know, hey, if that's what he's supposedly doing, then that's why he voted the way he did. Now, they're saying he's getting paid off by them? Well, I would like to see the evidence on that. But on the other hand, how much money has the gun lobby given the Clintons over the fucking years? How much is she getting from fossil fuel lobbyists? How much is she getting from the private prison industry? I mean, you know, one of the things that is making me talk about this is not so much that I'm bitched about, I'm pissed about myself, because I am. Because, what, Luke? Yeah, I mean, Maximilian Forte, of all fucking people, blocked me on Twitter, right? He supposedly is anti-capitalist, anti-colonialist. I think, right? This is what he teaches. I mean, he's a PhD up in Canada, right? So, I don't know what the fuck he blocked me for. I mean, one, he's in Canada, and I don't know what the... Well, fact, I just don't even know what the fuck I could have possibly have said to him. I don't even remember us having goddamn words. Well, you say there's a way to look up and find out if we've had contact before. Because I was following him. But, yeah, and then he blocked me, so I don't know what the fuck... And see, you know, you never really know what the fuck people block you for over anyway. And I admit, I block. I fucking block. And I'll tell you why. Because, you know, it just gets to the point where you're dealing with these conservative trolls who are suffering from, you know, internet Asperger syndrome. Meaning they are totally oblivious to the fact that they're causing people distress by insulting them or accusing them of really heinous goddamn things. I mean, if you look at, like, D-Ray, Kissin, is that his name? And Sean King over the Black Lives Matter thing. I mean, they were accusing them of all kinds of shit. Anything to badjack at them. And, you know, you have, you know, somebody said to me, you know, a few years back when I was doing this show, he's like, look, man, you know, don't be so upset with the type of bullshit that you put up with, because it means you're effective. And, you know, I'll take that. You know, I'll take that. That, you know, fucking when you're being accused of, you know, really, really fucking disgusting things and called all kinds of shit and called a nigga and called Cochise, or, you know, go smoke your peace pipe, or, you know, go play your jungle drum, or dindu, or whatever the fuck it is, you know, they decide to call you. You know, you're like, well, what the fuck did I just do? And then what you do is you realize that you're out there giving information, or you're challenging some belief that they fucking have. So they can't really get at you for the fact. So they get at you, right? So, you know, Maximilian Forte, I don't know what the fuck his problem is with me. And I don't know what the fuck I could have possibly said. I would think we'd be on the same side here. But this is where I was going. That, you know, this shit has gotten to the point where people on the left, who are supposedly on the same side, they claim they're supposedly on the, on the same, you know, same goals. Want to, you know, make things fair. You know, increase the justice. And I'm not talking about the application of justice. I'm talking about the practice of it. Real human justice. You know, try to do something about the goddamn environment so that we have something to fucking live on. You know, stop the misogyny. Stop the human trafficking. Stop the abuses. Stop, you know, just stop it all. Stop the fucking chaos. But it turns out it's really not like that. We're really dealing with a fucking class war here. We're dealing with a class situation. And what I'm saying is the majority of people who are supporting, you know, Hillary Clinton really don't want things to change, because they're comfortable where they are. And this is one brother. I don't have it in front of me now, but he's on Twitter. I just started following him. He's got a podcast. And, you know, it's pretty good. He's a smart young brother. And he's like, hey, man, if you can afford to do 4 more years of this, then vote Hillary Clinton. If you want better, then vote, you know, motherfucking Santa. Period. And if you don't want shit to get worse, then go for anybody that the GOP would throw up, because their lead man is Trump, and Cruz is no goddamn better. And John Kasich, I don't know what the fuck he does. I don't like to look at him. He's a mean cat, and I don't like to look at anybody in the fucking GOP. And I don't talk like this, but they're funny looking fucking people. When you look at Scott Walker and Rick Scott and fucking Trump, and I'm not even just talking about his fucking hair, look at the way he stands. He's a mope. Why are we being intimidated by funny looking people? You know, John Kasich, you know, Ted Cruz. I don't like to look at his fucking face. And the fact that they're insulting these other wives and shit, this is the U.S. political fucking class. And now you got Hillary Clinton. I mean, what did somebody say to me last week? I told you, Lupin, that lie about Bosnia, the sniper fire in Bosnia, was a little lie. It was a little lie. Here's a fucking world leader lying, saying that she was being shot at in Bosnia, and it was a fucking complete fib. How does that make the fucking country look? Well, what does that say about her goddamn integrity? She would boldly lie about something like that. CNN and MSNBC, they all motherfucking fixed that and said the bitch is lying. She's lying. She's lying. And yeah, don't accuse me of misogyny for this, because, you know, this is some bullshit. You know, I was using bitch in context just there, the way it's used today, right? But it's funny. I've complained about it, because, you know, it's one thing to fucking come out with bitch. To me, it's like motherfucker, you know? It's like wanker, asshole, whatever the fuck. But see, the same people who will say some shit like that to me, they sing nigga every motherfucking day in these goddamn rap songs. And will stand there and let a white guy call another white guy nigga in front of them. You know, and won't have anything to motherfucking say, and will accuse me of not being hip or not being fucking with it. You just an old motherfucker, you know. You just an old nigga, right? So, you know, you're not with this. No, I'm with this. And I'm watching all of this. I'm watching the fucking confusion. I'm watching people who are talking about, you know, Hillary Clinton has always been there for black people, and she's primarily responsible, you know, for helping lock up as many of you as motherfucking possible. People who are forgiving her for mass incarceration. You know, tell the people who have suffered from that bullshit if they can fucking forgive her. You got folks who are doing fucking decades of shit that they really didn't goddamn do. I mean, John Birch in Chicago. I mean, how many fucking cases? And they got a black site in goddamn shit in Chicago, Holman Square. This is what, you know, I mean, Rahm Emanuel's over there. What did he do about any of this? He just made it worse. So, yeah, you know, if you want 4 more years of this, then, yeah, go for fucking Clinton. But be honest about what it is that you're going for. You're a conservative motherfucking Democrat. Okay? Be honest about what the fuck you're about. You're a conservative fucking Democrat, which means if you're like Clinton, that means you're 2 steps from being a goddamn Republican. You know, I mean, what the fuck was the Obama administration? Nothing but moderate Republicanism. The same sort of thing that went on under Bill fucking Clinton. Remember who passed NAFTA and GATT? You notice the Republicans never bring that up. They never talk about NAFTA and GATT because they like NAFTA and GATT. So they're not going to criticize the Democrats over that, but they could certainly ding the Democrats over that, just like they could ding the Democrats over J. Edgar Hoover, since they want to talk about morals all the goddamn time. But they don't. They could ding the Democrats about Woodrow Wilson, but they don't. Which shows they're not really fucking serious about their own fucking politics, and also shows that they're fucking ignorant of their own fucking political fucking history, which is real. Which allows for something, like I said, what happened with Mike Malloy. You know, it's not that he's ignorant to American politics. Not in his case. In his case, he became a partisan American and didn't want this Australian to fucking tell him the goddamn truth. Your fucking country's out of goddamn control. It's off the motherfucking rails. And we're laughing at you in Australia. And it made him and some of his fucking listeners angry enough that they railed for the rest of that goddamn show about how fucked up people were who criticized the United States. After they've sat on that show and in every other fucking cafe and restaurant and pub that I've been to in the States and complained about North Korea, complained about France, complained about Belgium, complained about Brazil, Peru, talk about Russia, talk about Estonia. Well, anywhere in Eastern Europe, and don't know anything the fuck about it. Talk about Myanmar, right? Supporting Aung San Suu Kyi. You know, fuck her. She's not trying to protect the Rohingya. These are not extremist goddamn Muslims. These are indigenous people who happen to follow motherfucking Islam and have done so since Islam has been in their fucking country, which was there before Christianity. You know, after Buddhism. But the Buddhists have all of a sudden become nationalistic and racist. And she hasn't said a motherfucking thing in defense of these goddamn people as a matter of human rights. But isn't she a Nobel Peace whatever? She doesn't deserve it. Neither does goddamn Obama. And yeah, there's plenty of black people who still want to argue with me to this day that he deserves the Peace Prize. I'm like, for what? Because you just want him to have one? Because it gives you some what? You can thump your chest about this? You get nothing out of it. Same thing with Hillary Clinton. You know, her being up there, you get what? You get nothing. You'll get four more fucking years of the same. You know, and just to show you how American politics is, for those of you old enough to remember what was happening at the time, when George Herbert Walker Bush got into the fucking White House, everybody thought he was just going to continue on with Reagan. He said, no, we can't do this. I'm raising fucking taxes. He signs a federal bill to protect homosexuals in the federal prison system and shit. And they're just like, well, you know, no, well, you got to go. You got to go. See, you're being reasonable, and you're trying to protect the fucking home front. You got to go. You got to go. So, you know, that's, you know, this is where we're at. We have people who say that they, you know, they want to stop the racism, that they want to stop the businesses fucking over the people, that they want to stop the tax havens and shit for the rich that we're reading about in the Panama Papers. You know, because you do know that Hillary Clinton and Obama put that fucking shit through. They're the ones that signed that. And we also all know that they were motherfucking told that this was going to increase the money laundering, the money hiding, and it was going to increase the ways in which organized crime was going to fucking get their cash from one goddamn place to a fucking another. We're talking about fucking human traffickers, drug dealers, assassins, pedophiles, you know, snuff films, right? You know, potentially terrorism. If they're not already fucking using these goddamn things. So, you know, you got to motherfucking ask yourself, what the fuck are you really goddamn supporting? Who the fuck are you really supporting? And, you know, why? Because Bernie Sanders, yeah, he made some fucked up votes. Oh, well, he voted against Asada. So did the whole goddamn Congressional Black fucking Caucus, and then turned around, you know, and signed on to a letter by Maxine Waters to Dr. Fidel Castro saying, we didn't know what the fuck we were voting for. Do you follow what I'm saying? Do you understand what I'm saying? So, you know, I started this off because it was on my mind. You know, in my head as I started all this off, you know, why the fuck would Maximilian Forte of all fucking people block me? You know, I don't know what the fuck, you know, did we have an argument? What, you know, we've never met. I don't know. You know, did I write something he didn't like? You know, did I make a post that he didn't particularly care for? You know, I have no clue. But we're supposed to be on the same side here in terms of colonialism, anti-imperialism, and the defense of indigenous rights. So why would he be blocking me, right? So, you know, here we have the nastiness that I'm seeing and experiencing on Twitter from people who consider themselves to be Hillary folks, but they are totally dismissive of her lying and all of the other bullshit that she's been caught up in, and the fact that she's as establishment as they goddamn come. And they, you know, and their opposition to Bernie Sanders is false. What has he lied about? I mean, really, what the fuck has he lied about? I mean, now it's this big thing. People are, oh, his taxes. What about the Clintons and their goddamn taxes? Check their motherfucking money trail. How much are they goddamn worth? They're not just worth a million or $2. I know there's a couple of people who really fucking set black folks, I hate to say this, who say, yeah, well, they only got a couple of million. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Are you fucking kidding? You know, it's like they're in the fucking multiple goddamn millions. Are you mad? And like I said, with this Panama fucking papers thing, the fullest list of Americans, the German paper, it said it hasn't come out yet. They said it haven't fucking come out yet. Yeah, it's coming. The list is coming. So, you know, what is it? Seduce? Yeah, I can't remember the name of the, it's dude something. I can't remember. German something. But in any case, you know, what the fuck is going on, American left wing? What's left of the American left wing? Because, see, that's another thing. People get offended when you say, oh, the fucking American left wing is useless. Well, I'm sorry, sports fans. It is goddamn useless. Okay? You know, the fact that you have two or fucking three people out of 1,000 who are fucking serious, who do understand what's happening, does not make a movement. It makes individuals out there to have a sympathetic leaning towards something. But they have no motherfucking power. They have no fucking power. They have no fucking power. I mean, for example, they were complete fucking idiots, but this Bundy thing that just went on over here at the Mount Hood Range, over here in Burns, Oregon, in where I, you know, like 300 some odd miles from where I am, you kind of get my point? They were assholes. That they were so sure that everybody else was, you know, that there were so many of them that once they did this, that everybody would just rise up. That's what they were counting on. And they misjudged their motherfucking country. There's a whole lot of people that feel exactly the same way they do, but they're not that fucking extreme, and they want this shit, but they'd rather vote for it. You know, they'll scream and beat people up like cowards at a fucking Trump rally, like that punk-ass Uncle Tom, United States Air Force Sergeant Tony Petway, and he deserves all the motherfucking condemnation he can receive. That Uncle Tom son of a bitch punched the white man who was trying to stop the racism of Donald Trump. So fuck a Tony Petway and every other Uncle Tom nigga that motherfucking thinks like him. You see, because, you know, they, like Sheriff Clark, have the idea that if there's going to be a motherfucking plantation, I'm going to be the boss nigga. I'm going to be the boss nigga. And that's the same thing with the feminism of Hillary Clinton. Her fucking attitude is, if there's going to be a fucking woman up there, it's going to be me. And like Margaret Thatcher, who we can look at as a good goddamn example, she's ruthless. She's ruthless. I mean, if you want to fucking be do politics, you have to be fucking ruthless. We all goddamn know this. It's not fucking Scandal. It's not the West Wing or whatever the fuck. You have to be ruthless. You have to be ready to fucking chop heads. If not, you will never lead any goddamn thing. You know, we are in a world that is run by bullies. And I know there's a lot of fucking people who simply do not want to accept that because they would rather have this Pollyanna, you know, view of things. And I understand the desire, but it's not realistic. The people who run the fucking world run it because they want to goddamn run it. You understand? They want that fucking power. And they're willing to do, listen to what I'm saying, they're willing to do what is necessary to fucking get that power. Now, once they get it, that's another thing. You know, what's the story about the sword hanging over the cat who was telling the king, yeah, man, you know, everything is cool. You know, look at you. You got all the women, man, you know. You got all the gold, you got everybody, you know, bowing to you. You can have whatever the fuck you want anytime you want. You know, you can call the war whenever you want. You can have a motherfucker executed if you want and shit. Because, hey, man, you know, it's badass. I can't remember the king and I can't pronounce the name of the motherfucker, but it's a sword or something. Look at him. And the cat, man, you know, he's just kissing ass, you know, brown nose in this king. And, you know, the king's like, look, man, why don't you just come up and try this? He gave him the best food. He gave him the best hoes, right? You know, all of that. You know. So he got to sit there for a little while. He's sitting up there. He's enjoying everything. He's probably smoking a huge blunt. You know what I mean? Whatever they used to get high at the time. He's got some chicks sitting on his lap. You know. So, king says, hey, man. One of you boys go up there and take some cord, and a thin cord. Matter of fact, it was a horse's hair's tail. It was the a hair from a horse's tail, right? A strand. Tied a sword to this shit and tied it and hung it above the throne where the normal citizen is sitting. And he's like, what's up? And the king said, well, I just want you to, you know, know. You know, that's what it's like to have that throne. Do you still like it? And the cat said, no, you know, I don't want tips. Because he had to realize, you know, with all of this bullshit comes the envy. Comes the, you know, the avarice that comes along with the job, right? There's a lot of negativity that comes along with that shit. And of course, there's always somebody who's just as ambitious as you. You see, you know, I never particularly wanted to be a dom. You dig what I'm saying? But, you know, you got motherfuckers out there that they just wake up one morning or they've all their lives felt that they were better than every fucking buddy else around them. And that they didn't want to share with anybody. That they had to be the number one motherfucker at the top of the pyramid and everybody else had to be under them. And that's just the way it's going to be. They are, you know, it's just a thing. A psychological fucking thing with the human species. They are just some goddamn people who are just fucking evil. Okay. And no matter what the fuck you do, no matter how much church and shit they get or how much acid they drop, they're still going to be fucking self-centered sons of bitches who don't fucking think about anybody, don't give a fuck about anybody else, and they'd be willing to take the whole fucking world down with them. I mean, whenever somebody tells me, oh, people don't think like that, then what the fuck are you talking about? We have Alcoholics Anonymous. We have, Addict Anonymous. We got Sex Anonymous. You know, we got all these fucking addictions. You know, we got all these fucking people, man, who, you know, how can I put this? You know, you got people who, for whatever reasons, they can't goddamn, I don't know, they get into something and they can't let it go. And for, you know, some folks, man, you know, there's power. It's the same fucking thing. It's the same fucking thing. They get addicted to power. They want power. But so, well, I suppose you actually have to have a little power before you can be addicted to it. But it's a craving. Like sex. Like for money. I mean, you got people that they just want power. And when you look at the Republican Party, that's what it is. And when you look at their rank and file, like I was saying with black folks, you know, rank and file in the civil rights movement, you know, a lot of them just wanted a job and some of them wanted revenge. Well, you know, you look at the people who follow Trump, they want to feel better than somebody, anybody. And when you look at these people, they're nobody. When you look at Trump, it wasn't for the fact that his father had money, Trump would be a fucking nobody sitting somewhere in goddamn Queens, like on that, All in the Family, that Archie Bunker, you know, the ripoff of Alf Garner. Right. Yeah, I mean, that's the American version of Alf Garner, you know, through and through. The only that Edith, you know, the wife in that show used to talk back to Alf, though. This Edith took it. Very American wife. She took the abuse, right? Because she felt that that was her duty. But, you know, that Archie Bunker attitude in the States is real. Well, the Alf Garner attitude in Britain is real. But, you know, that shit is real. And these are people who want to feel better than somebody. Fucking anybody. And if they can feel better than somebody, anywhere, then, you know, it's worth it as far as they're concerned, as long as they don't have to do the violence, as long as they don't have to do the actual discriminating, as long as they don't have to get their hands dirty. See, in order to be a king, man, you got to be willing to draw blood. So, you know, in order to be a white person here for privilege, you have to be willing to hurt somebody else. And to be passive about it and pretend that this is the way God wanted things. Since time immemorial, right? Going back to the Stoicism. So yeah, you know, American left, man, you gotta ask yourself a question. What the fuck are you doing? Where the fuck are you going? You know, and if to come after Sanders like this, I mean, you know, I mean, it's one thing to say, okay, he's an old man, this, that, and the other. Okay, fine, do that. But to say he's an old communist Jew, I mean, well, goddamn. If you're a Democrat, you might as well be voting for goddamn Trump. This is the Angry Indian, and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please, stay tuned.
Hi, this is Zesh Nine from Zesh9.com, and you're listening to the Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
In Navajo teaching in the old traditional world, there were four basic genders. The first one was that women are the first gender because Navajo is a matrilineal society. Men is the second gender, and third gender is the Natle. born as a male person but functioned in the role of a girl in early childhood and functions more in the role of a woman in adulthood. And it's just the opposite for the fourth gender, where they were born biologically female but functioned in the role of a boy in early childhood and matured into a man and conducts their life in that gender identity.
The masculine and feminine together are sometimes reflected so completely in the body of one person, it's as if they have two spirits.
In our tradition, in the Western European tradition, we tend to think of gender as pretty neatly divided between male and female, starting with Adam and Eve. And many world cultures, including many Native American cultures, don't have such a neat division. There is some movement back and forth between genders related to both the way people present and the way people relate to each other sexually. We think we know that there's a typical male and a typical female, but the fact is almost everyone diverges from those typical qualities.
In Western culture, when I say a girl, there's automatically an assumption that girl is female. And the same with a boy. If I say boy, well, that's a boy. We never pause to think that could that boy be a female.
We're in a many-gendered world, and getting out of this gay, straight, heterosexual, homosexual, binary dichotomy, which has been made up.
Where I come from, we have one of our festivals during the year, Holy Days, where all the men and all the women in the entire village will switch clothes. So all the men will dress as women and all the women will dress as men. Everyone switches.
Would you like to hear the lie that judges tell jurors every day?
Listen up. This matters. I'm Lewis Black, and this is the Civil Liberties Minute with ACLU attorney Bill Newman.
In a criminal case, the judge instructs the jury, you decide the facts, but you jurors must apply to those facts the law as I explain it. And if the prosecution has proven the defendant's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, then you must return a verdict of guilty. The problem with this instruction? It's not true. It's not true at all. And the judge well knows that, but most jurors don't. Jury nullification, the right of jurors to say no, to just say no to a prosecution, was central to the Bill of Rights. Indeed, Thomas Jefferson famously believed that jurors' right to nullify was central to democracy. Writing in the Champion magazine recently, criminal defense attorney Patrick Barone cautions that care must be taken when considering nullification because juries can use that authority to enhance and augment the power of the elite rather than to limit it. But, Barone continues, jury nullification can and should be a critical limitation on legislatures bent on promulgating and judges bent on enforcing ever more overreaching criminal laws. The take-home lesson here, criminal juries should know of their right to nullify because that power can constitute liberty's last defense.
The Civil Liberties Minute is made possible by the American Civil Liberties Union because freedom can't defend itself.
I'm Carol Warden. The Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center asked for your help in spreading awareness of the National Public Awareness Campaign for the availability of Plan B within Indian Health Service. Plan B is an emergency contraceptive that is routinely denied to Native women at IHS facilities. Although Plan B has been available without a prescription for adult women since 2006 and as of 2009 available to women age 17 and up, it is still not provided over-the-counter at 90% of IHS pharmacies. Our goal is to ensure that Plan B is available as an over-the-counter contraceptive for all Native women and to incorporate access of Plan B into standardized sexual assault policies within IHS. We also seek to inform Native women of their right to Plan B so that they are able to make informed decisions regarding their reproductive health. Please help us get the word out. Native women are entitled to the same level of health care as all other women. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
Hello,
Hi, I'm Buffy St. Marie. We have overcome many obstacles in our history as Aboriginal people. We've survived. Today, we must work together, become leaders in the fight to stop the spread of HIV/AIDS in our communities. We have to think about the 7 generations ahead of us. It's a matter of survival.
The good thing about him is his constant metamorphosis. He does rebear himself like the phoenix, and what the next incarnation will be, I don't know.
Well, you seem to have me figured out as the next reincarnation for me is going to be Charles Manson.
Well, you let yourself...
Why don't you read what you wrote,
You fella? Let yourself in for it, and I will tell you, I'll give a little background here, that Mailer has
We all know that I stabbed my wife many years ago. We do know that, Gore. You were playing on that. Now, come on.
Oh, I'm not to forget about it. Listen,
well, no, you don't want to forget about it. You're a liar and a hypocrite. You were playing on it.
But that wasn't playing a liar or a hypocrite. I wasn't going to talk about it.
The fact of the matter is that people who read the New York Review of Books know perfectly well. They know all about it. And it's your subtle little way of doing it. You know, the New Yorker
ones. Oh, I'm beginning to see what bothers you now. Okay, I'm getting the point.
Are you ready to apologize?
I would apologize if it hurts your feelings. Of course I would.
No, it hurts my sense of intellectual pollution.
Well, I must say, expert, you should know about
I
that.
I would like to... Yes, well, I've had to smell your works from time to time, and that has helped me to become an expert on intellectual pollution, yes.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I was not going to...
Men insult each other, not only in public, but you act as if you were in private. That's the odd way.
It's the art of television, isn't
it? It's very odd that you act as if you were the only people here.
Aren't we?
They are here. He's here. I'm here, and I'm becoming very, very bored.
My... You still haven't told me whether you're Gore's manager or the referee.
If you make history here by punching a lady...
I won't have it.
Now, look, you see this whole thing that goes on. Now you say if I make history by punching a lady. You know perfectly well that I'm the gentlest of the 4 people here.
I just hope it lasts through the next whatever we have left.
I guarantee you I wouldn't hit any of the people here because they are smaller.
In what ways?
intellectually smart.
Well, let me turn my chair and join these 3. Perhaps you'd like 2 more chairs to contain your giant intellect.
I'll take the 2 chairs if you will all accept finger bowls.
Yeah, what?
Finger bowls.
What does that mean? I don't understand. I want to know, and then I will respond accordingly. If we'll accept finger bowls. To do what in?
Think about it.
Who wants to grab this on our team? No, I nearly have it. It means something to me. Finger bowls. Finger bowls, things you dip your fingers in after you've gotten them filthy from eating. Am I on the right track? Am I warm?
Why don't you look at your question sheet and ask a question? Hey, can I talk to the audience for
a moment? Why don't you fold it 5 ways and put it where the moon don't shine?
Spending all your money to look so neat. 5-minute fashions never get to stay. You worry about the fashion changing every day. You was a punk too. Hey,
of mud.
It's your skin head now.
This is Annie from Au Revoir Simone. You're listening to a Creative Commons licensed podcast.
Gloria, at the festival, you worked for the Independent Research Service.
That's right.
Well, exactly when did your own association with the CIA start, and in what fashion? Did they come to you, or did you go to them?
In 1958, when I came home from India, I discussed with student leaders, past and present, many of them active with the National Student Association, this kind of small foundation to encourage Americans to go. They thought it was a good idea, too. I was then told by foundations and professors and friends that I should not do this, that I would get in trouble with the House Un-American Activities Committee, the American Legion, all of those 50s people. And I became convinced that it was impossible. It was at that point that the student leaders said to me that they had in the past received funds for international programs from the CIA, and that they felt that this was important and could also be partly funded by the CIA.
Well, I mean, did you feel that you really tried? I mean, did you go around to all of the wealthy private foundations, wealthy private people, and explain your point of view and explain why you felt it was important that the United States be represented at these things in a certain way? What did they tell you?
They told me that, well, the Ford Foundation, for instance, told me that they thought we were too liberal and too controversial, and that we would endanger their cultural programs in Austria. I mean, the first festival was being held in Vienna. It was not encouraging at all. And the private individuals to whom I went often had particular points of view to put forward, which would have been much, much more restricting than the CIA funds were, which were free. I mean, no one was told what to say.
What do you mean they were free? You mean to say it was easier for you to work for the CIA than a private organization?
That's right. That's right. And the reason I think that comes as a surprise, as it did to me at the time. I mean, I had the conventional liberals' view of the CIA as a right-wing incendiary group. And I was amazed to discover that this was far from the case, that they were enlightened, liberal, nonpartisan activists of the sort who characterized the Kennedy administration, for instance.
You have not been working now for the CIA since 1962. Mm-hmm. You still criticize. You were down recently in Washington?
Yes, when the story broke that I had once been, that I have for 4 years been a Central Intelligence agent, I was demonstrating outside the Pentagon underneath Mr. McNamara's office against bombing in Vietnam. And this didn't precisely fit with the image of a CIA agent, but then neither does this.
Coming to you live from Northeast Jefferson County, Kansas. Your one true voice in Kansas. This is the Radio Free Kansas.
I'm your host, Mike Cadell, broadcasting from North Jefferson County, Kansas, smack dab between Kansas City, Topeka, Lawrence, Atchison. Easiest way to describe it. Put together quite a good show. Think you're going to like it.
Radio Free Kansas on blogtalkradio.com/HideInCopFire.
This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Head on radionetwork.com, an internet-based conversation radio experiment. Available most easily at headonradionetwork.com. There's a listen live button. Just jump right on it, and there you are. Or if you're on a mobile device, it's also easy to find us at TuneIn Radio, a nice app for your mobile smartphone, or Tuner Internet Radio, or Dar.fm, or Stitcher Radio, Streama.com. We are rather ubiquitous. I mean, if we got more every night, we'd be paying salaries, right? Head on radionetwork.com.
You'd be loving this, mate, wouldn't you?
Have you witnessed anything like this? Anybody can report this behavior.
Hey, guys, can I get a hand for a sec?
I thought you lesbians were supposed to be as good as us, like.
No matter how subtle...
Hey, princess, where's your tiara today?
They are all forms of sexually based harassment. If you know someone's prejudices have got out of hand or have become inappropriate, do something about it.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Missy Elliott for the Black AIDS Institute.
HIV happens to us more than it does anybody else, which is why we should all get tested, because if we don't step up, then nobody will.
Get informed. Tested, get treated, and get involved. For more information, call the Black AIDS Institute at 213-353-3610. That's 213-353-3610. Or online at www.blackaids.org.
Hello. This is a message to the so-called New Black Panther Party, which resides in the United States of America. As an American citizen, I ask that you all immediately disband and stop what you are doing, which is misrepresenting an organization and a culture that you do not understand. As the child of a Black Panther, I was raised to understand that the ideals of a Black Panther shall live on. However, the physical representation of a Black Panther can and will be oftentimes misrepresented and imitated. These gentlemen are Black Panthers, and they also have the original mindset of a Black Panther, which is to ensure truth, justice, and equality for every single tax-paying American citizen, regardless of the color of their skin or their ethnicity. God bless you, and power to the people.
Now that America has a black president, is this proof that racism is a thing of the past?
Well, I think white men were 100% of the people that wrote the Constitution, 100% of the people who signed the Declaration of Independence, 100% of the people who died at Gettysburg and Vicksburg, probably close to 100% of the people who died at Normandy. This has been a country built basically by white folks in this country who were 90% of the entire nation. I think they ought to do. They ought to defend the legitimate rights of white working class folks who are the victims of discrimination.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Media. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
Listen to Angry Indian Radio. He is not only for Indians, but he is also for blacks and other minorities. And they have done a lot on the problems in Palestine, and also the problems of blacks. And so I recommend that you listen to them.
I'm so thirsty for revolution. I'm so crazy about the people. We're going to stand together. We're going to have a black army, a Mexican-American army, an alliance in solidarity, as well as some progressive whites, all of us. And we're going to march on this pig power structure. And we're going to say, stick them up, motherfucker. We come for what's ours. Up against the wall. Power to the people. Thanks, brother.
Could you present yourself?
My name is Eric Horn. I'm an anarchist publisher. I live in Berkeley, California, and I'm from Michigan.
Could you speak about your background?
My mother's family is native from Michigan. They have been back from northern Michigan as far as they can remember, so many generations. And there is still memory within my family of the Christian settlers coming and giving the northern Michigans a choice between converting to Catholicism or walking to Oklahoma. So I have a background in Native American life. My own background is urban. I grew up in a medium-sized town in Michigan.
What is the relation you're making between anarchism and indigenism?
Well, indigenism. I would say that I'm not unfriendly to the general anti-civilization critique. If I were to criticize if I were to criticize anti-civilization discussions, it would be that its origins is very much a European, Western sort of set of examinations and examples. So just a very simple example would be that the sort of pastoral approach that many anti-civilization people seem to lean on, it's essentially in a tradition. So I guess my confrontation with that would be that there are traditions that are very different than these traditions that are more local. In other words, I do think that the traditions that originate in Northern America, what we call the North American continent, are worth examining, are worth understanding. And to put it more bluntly, I think that most European approaches to the kind of problems that we face as a broader civilization are not appropriate for here.
So what can be appropriate for here?
Well, I mean, you know, there's a strategic element to that conversation, and then there's a form of life. So I think that I personally believe that natives, by and large, in this environment, lived in small bands. They, by and large, traveled. They had relationships that were, you know, less complicated and involved smaller numbers of people. So to talk about a transition between the world that we live in now and sort of a world, a hunter-gatherer society, that's a terrible conversation to have. Because by and large, what you end up getting trapped into is one of the most kind of pernicious of Western ideas, which is called humanism. And this is the idea that human life is good, and if human life is good, then more human life is better. And so the extension of humanism, humanist ideas in the modern world, is that the most humans are the best. And so this means that all of the kind of humanist logic is that any conversation that imagines less people is by nature like a morally loaded. Humanists are against talking about there being fewer people than there are today. So that a humanist argument is diametrically opposed to the idea of living in smaller groups of people.
And what was the problem with, like, between anarchist and indigenous people to meet more often?
Part of the complication, I'm not exactly sure what you mean by the question, but where I go here is that I would like other indigenous people to talk clearly about a path by which people who were born in this continent could become indigenous to this continent. In other words, genocide has not been completed, but it's damn close. And so this means that for people who feel the explicit pain of genocide, they're touchy on the subject. And so as a result, it means that many self-described Native people and Native communities, they want nothing to do with the people who they can pretty rightfully say were somewhat responsible for the genocide. So I guess if I were going to be explicit about a positive program, it would be that I think indigenous people need to talk clearly about how people who are born here, quote-unquote Native Americans or Native Canadians or Native people of the Western Hemisphere, can become indigenous. In other words, what does that transformation look like?
How we can learn as anarchists from indigenous perspectives, like radical indigenous perspectives?
Yeah, that's very difficult because, you know, one of the first things that anarchists or, you know, as a broad category, white people have to recognize is that indigenous people may not want to teach them. And so the answer is that it might not be possible. In other words, like, we might be too far gone. And, you know, when I think of the people who I'm from, you know, we have so few things left of our kind of original story. Even our language is, like, the dialect that is of my people, which is Ottawa, is very, very small, very few numbers of speakers. They're very old. The larger language set, which is Chippewa, you know, or Anishinaabe, there's more speakers, but there's probably many more in Canada than there are in the U.S., and these borders are totally real within this context. But more than that, almost every Native person who I've met who is, you know, like of the people who I'm from or you know, my heritage, they almost all are either Christians or went to Christian boarding schools or have been touched by genocide, to put it bluntly.
But more important, you was talking about how the indigenous can become indigenous.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that would be my priority, personally, sure. But again, I don't think that it's out of the reach of white people to be engaged in this. I just am not sure that it's going to come from outside of them. In other words, it might be generations of people maybe quieting down or listening closer to not just the people around them, but to the quieter things in their lives. And I'm not a hopeful person. I think all indications are that things are going to get much, much worse before people really listen to this sort of a lesson.
And as both indigenous and anarchist, how do you reconcile your perspectives?
How do I reconcile them? I mean, to me, it's very easy. I mean, one of the only fights that I get into with my relatives on this topic is that they do accept something that they call leadership. You know, so I think that this is a relevant question for anarchists to ask themselves. In which ways do we accept leadership or not accept leadership? By and large, you know, anarchists do accept leadership, but they call it something else. So for me, there's not a conflict. If there's a conflict at all, it's with certain tendencies within anarchist thought and indigenous values. So, you know, obviously, anarchism that tends towards mass society, that tends towards a prescription, towards how the revolution is going to come, I've never felt affinity for them. But other than the fact that I've written a little bit about being indigenous and anarchism, I don't confront people with that fact very often.
And you've been talking about the lake of indigenous or anarchist also. You name few, like Gordiel, but how do you perceive that?
Well, you know, there's also a very good article that just came from the Sovereign Self about 2 or 3 months ago called Egoist Indigenous, which is a really good article. I recommend checking that out. But I mean, this is the same reason why, like, if you go to most of the larger reservations, the countercultural natives are still listening to heavy metal. Like, in other words, like, life in the reservation, to the extent to which those are the larger populations of Native people, I mean, it's behind the times, to put it gently. And so how would these people even be exposed to anarchist thought or really even radical political thought at all? I mean, I hate to say it, but the two best examples of radical messages reaching them are Rage Against the Machine, you know, which is a popular band, and Blackfire, which is a Native band from Arizona. I visited them last year in Arizona, and their setup there was very, very impressive. They were involved in the, is it Sugarwater Mountain, or maybe it was San Francisco Mountains in Arizona, the water fight that's happening there. And the kind of main person who's associated with this is a very charismatic, you can imagine that he's a very compelling person. Not to criticize, and I really don't want to criticize, but for me, the force of genocide is, I mean, this is a horrific, horrible machine that grinds people to death. And as much as I respect the spirit of people who resist it and who are willing to stand up against it, that role is not for everybody. And I don't want people to feel like they can't participate in these sorts of conversations or in this sort of thinking if they're not the kind of person who wants to stand up against the monsters of this world. So I give the Blackfire people, you know, a lot of credit for how, like, powerful and willing that they are and willing to be warriors. But I also just want to say that these machines will destroy you. And so I don't necessarily think that it's as simple of an answer that if we all stand up against it, that somehow we're going to stop it. I feel like, you know, Montreal over the last few weeks, if it shows anything, it's that the police are still very effective at policing.
Imagine you're on vacation with your family. You're visiting Las Vegas, Disney World, the Mall of America, or the Golden Gate Bridge. You take a photo. And that's when things get weird. A security guard stops you, wants to ask you questions. He writes down your name, the details on your driver's license, asks where you live, where you work. He reads your information into a radio. He says surveillance cameras captured you taking photos of a location considered vulnerable to security threats, like terrorism. Terrorism, you think? No, not me. He takes your camera, looks through the photos, and confiscates the memory card. He pats you down for weapons. Weapons? This is crazy, you say. What have I done wrong? It's entirely possible you've broken no known rules or laws at all. You didn't see any signs banning photos. But this is the new reality of a post-9/11 America. Let's rewind a bit. After the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, then-President George W. Bush deeply reorganized the federal government and created a massive new Department of Homeland Security. The U.S. government was determined never to miss intelligence again. No lead would be unfollowed, no stone unturned. Part of this new department's job was to give billions in Homeland Security grants to state and local agencies so they could participate in the fight against terrorism. Hundreds of millions of those dollars were used to build more than 70 intelligence fusion centers across the U.S. Inside these command centers, local police and sheriffs joined forces with the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, and other federal agencies. Their mission is to collect, analyze, and share vast amounts of information about possible criminal and terrorist threats. And from their perspective, you could be one of them. See, after that security guard wrote down all of your personal information, it may have become a suspicious activity report, beginning a journey from his notepad to the local police department and then on to a fusion center. At the fusion center, your data can be put into a database, where it may be kept indefinitely. Your info could then be accessed by other law enforcement agencies, like nearby police departments and the FBI. An FBI agent could even come knocking at your door. This won't happen to everyone, but suspicious activity reporting appears to be on the rise. More than 15,000 reports are already stored in one national law enforcement database, with only half of states participating so far. In D.C., researchers examined 40,000 suspicious person and vehicle calls made over 20 months from 2005 to 2007. None were confirmed terrorist threats. 200 were deemed potential threats. Here's how it works. In LA, a dry cleaning employee found a thumb drive in a customer's dirty laundry. On it were photos of the Burbank airport. The employee called police, and they filed a suspicious activity report. At the Mall of America in Minnesota, an elderly Pakistani man left his cell phone on a food court table. When he came back for it, security guards had created a perimeter around the phone and other unattended items that weren't his. He was interrogated, and an FBI agent later showed up at his family's home. This is life in America since hijackers killed 3,000 people in terrorist attacks a decade ago. Since then, we've had no major attacks in the U.S. But civil liberties watchdogs say some of our basic freedoms may be at risk, like freedom of movement, freedom from harassment by police, and the right to be treated as innocent until proven guilty.
There are many arguments against the death penalty. It's not a deterrent against the crimes that it punishes. Society who use the death penalty don't have lower crime rates than those that do. When a country abolishes the death penalty, they are not plunged into criminal chaos. But even if the death penalty did reduce crime rates, would it then be acceptable? The death penalty targets the economically disadvantaged, those who can't afford good legal counsel, those without a voice in society. There's a saying in the U.S., capital punishment means that those without the capital get the punishment. Statistics show this is true. But would it be acceptable if people from all sections of society were executed? Does killing a rich man make killing a poor man right? The death penalty is irreversible and results in the death of innocence. When someone is dead, a retrospective pardon is of little use to them or their family. Since 1990, in China, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Nigeria, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, and the USA, there have been 51 recorded executions of child offenders, some as young as 14 years old. But even if no more innocents or children are killed, should we tolerate the death penalty? The death penalty is never acceptable. It abuses two of our most basic human rights. Everyone has the right to live, and no one shall be subject to torture. The death penalty obviously kills people, but it also tortures, physically by the brutal nature of execution, and psychologically by forcing individuals to wait to be killed. They wait, sometimes for decades, while others are led to their deaths. The horror of this waiting is unimaginable. Human rights are thus called because they apply to all human beings. They belong to all of us equally. An attack on these fundamental rights anywhere is an attack against all of us. The right to life is inalienable. It cannot be given and it cannot be taken away. No matter how terrible the crime, in a world full of uncertainty, human rights are a clearly drawn line, a line between what is right and what is wrong, the line between imprisonment and execution. Every individual facing the death penalty is, whatever they stand accused of, still a human being. However much we revile them, however much we are outraged by their actions, however much we want revenge, they are still human beings. They may well have killed and tortured. They've crossed the line. But do we really want to join them?
I would like anyone who is listening to consider some thoughts that I paraphrase from the words of German pastor Martin Niemöller. You might not care if Donald Trump says Muslims must register with their government because you're not one. And you might not care if Donald Trump says he's going to round up all the Hispanic immigrants because you're not one. And you might not care if Donald Trump says it's okay to rough up black protesters because you're not one. And you might not care if Donald Trump wants to suppress journalists because you're not one. But think about this. If he keeps going and he actually becomes president, he might just get around to you And you better hope that there's someone left to help you.
ಬರುತ್ತಿದೆ ಎಲ್ಲಡೆ ಭೀಕರವಾಗಿ ಏಡ್ಸು ಏಡ್ಸು ಏಡ್ಸೋ, ನಮ್ಮ ವೈರಿಗೂ ಬಾರದಿರಲಿ ಅದು ಓಡ್ಸು ಓಡ್ಸು ಓಡ್ಸೋ.
ಹೆಚ್ಚಿನ ಲೈಂಗಿಕ ಸಂಪರ್ಕದ ಸೋಂಕುಗಳು ವಾಸಿಯಾಗುತ್ತವೆ, ಆದರೆ ಏಡ್ಸ್ಗೆ ಚಿಕಿತ್ಸೆ ಇಲ್ಲ.
ಏಡ್ಸ್ಗೆ ತುತ್ತಾಗಿರುವ ವ್ಯಕ್ತಿಗಳಿಗೆ ನಿಮ್ಮಿಂದ ಬೇಕಾಗಿರುವುದು ಭೇದ ಭಾವ ಉಪೇಕ್ಷೆಯಲ್ಲ, ಅವರಿಗೆ ಅಗತ್ಯವಿರುವುದು ನಿಮ್ಮ ಪ್ರೀತಿ, ಅನುಕಂಪ ಮತ್ತು ಬೆಂಬಲ.
ಕಾಂಡಮ್ ಅಥವಾ ನಿರೋಧ ಬಳಕೆ ಲೈಂಗಿಕ ಸಂಗಾತಿಗಳ ಸಂಖ್ಯೆ ಹೆಚ್ಚಷ್ಟು ಎಚ್ಐವಿ ಸೋಂಕು ತಗುಲುವ ಅಪಾಯವೂ ಹೆಚ್ಚುತ್ತದೆ. ಒಂದು ಪಕ್ಷ ನಿಮಗೆ ಎಚ್ಐವಿ ಸೋಂಕು ಇದೆ ಎಂದು ಗೊತ್ತಾದರೆ ನಿಮ್ಮ ಆರೋಗ್ಯವನ್ನು ಕಾಪಾಡಿಕೊಂಡು ಹೋಗಲು ನಿಮಗೆ ಮತ್ತು ನಿಮ್ಮ ಕುಟುಂಬದವರಿಗೆ ಸ್ವಯಂ ಪ್ರೇರಿತ ಸಮಾಲೋಚನೆ ಮತ್ತು ಪರೀಕ್ಷಾ ಕೇಂದ್ರದವರು ಸಹಾಯ ಮಾಡುವರು.
ಚಿಕಿತ್ಸೆಗೊಳಗಾಗದ ಲೈಂಗಿಕ ರೋಗಗಳಾದ ಯೋನಿಯ ಸ್ರಾವ ಮತ್ತು ಗಾಯ, ಹುಣ್ಣು, ಕಿಬ್ಬೊಟ್ಟೆಯಲ್ಲಿ ನೋವು ಮತ್ತು ಸಂಭೋಗದ ಸಮಯದಲ್ಲಿ ನೋವುವಿರುವ ಸ್ತ್ರೀಯರಿಗೆ ಎಚ್ಐವಿ ಸೋಂಕು ತಗುಲುವ ಅಪಾಯ ಹೆಚ್ಚು.
ಏಡ್ಸ್ ಬಾರದಂತೆ ತಡೆಗಟ್ಟಲು ನೀವು ನಿಮ್ಮ ಸಂಗಾತಿ ಇಬ್ಬರಲ್ಲೂ ಪರಸ್ಪರ ವಿಶ್ವಾಸ, ಪ್ರೀತಿ, ನಿಷ್ಠೆ ಇರಲಿ. ನಿಮ್ಮದು ಏಕಪತಿ ಮತ್ತು ಏಕಪತ್ನಿತ್ವ ಸಂಬಂಧವಾಗಿರಲಿ.
Sisters, brothers, friends, and supporters. Well, here it is, another year, another birthday. This one makes me 62 years old. Also, this makes it my 30-plus years in prison. I believe it was right after I was illegally convicted in Fargo, North Dakota, when I wrote a statement telling everyone that my freedom would only come after the masses had demanded it. But first, we would have to unite and organize to reach them. So far, we have been unable to do so. Yes, we have reached millions who signed my petitions. We circulated it throughout the world, asking for my release. Through most of those good peoples are from Europe. But we also made a lot of gains here in the United States. At one time, we had 55 members of Congress sign a letter for a new trial or my release. 55 members is historical. No other prisoner in history has ever been able to accomplish this, nor has anyone else, individually. And there are other accomplishments we have made and won here in the United States. Still, I sit in prison, not because I am guilty of the alleged crime I was illegally convicted of, but because we are still unable to reach the masses here in America. The reasons for this is not because the American peoples do not care or want to help, but because we have been unable to reach them. Personally, I believe the majority of them do care and want to help. We sense this from the ones we are able to reach. We are moving forward very slowly in this freedom campaign of mine. The reason for this is we just do not have the financial resources to move forward at the pace we would like to be. This is the real and only reason we have been unable to reach the peoples of the United States. Nothing is free here in America. Not justice or the media. So although there still is no light at the end of the tunnel for me or my freedom, we continue struggling forward. I continue to search for the hope and strength I need to survive. I continue to pray and hope that one day I will get the support I need from the American people, and one day I will still be able to walk out of prison. So my hopes and spirits are still high at my 62 years of age. I can tell you in this continued struggle, we are still finding bits and pieces of new evidence to file new appeals on. Those of you who have followed my case closely, I can imagine are thinking, how can this be, as there has been so many constitutional violations already? But the same old problem exists. The courts continue to cover up the criminal acts in my conviction committed by my prosecutors. Your help is still needed more than ever. Please give us all you can. Thank you. No shot in the spirit of Crazy Horse. Tom J. We love you, lass. Leonard Peltier.
What's up? My name is Jasiri X, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really responding to the call, man, of my sister Rosa Clemente, you know what I'm saying? For Men in Hip Hop, really stand up and say, like, rape under no circumstances is acceptable. You know what I'm saying? Rape shouldn't be rapped about. It shouldn't be supported. You know what I'm saying? And I'm really feeling like, you know, especially after Rick Ross came out today and said what he said, you know, he didn't use the word rape, but he described a scenario in which, you know, he put something in a woman's drink and had sex with her and she didn't consent. If you have sex with a woman and she didn't consent, that's rape. And we have to say no to rape. And beyond Rick Ross, whether it's Fox News or their viewers attacking Zelina Maxwell for asking men to stop raping women, whether it's Hollywood, you know, perpetuating, you know, this rape culture, you know, it's got to stop. And it's really, you know, we got to take personal responsibility as men. My name is Jasiri X. This is One Hood.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
This ends our news flash.
I've been cherishing through the perishing winter nights and days a funny little phrase that means such a lot to me that you got to be with me heart and soul, for on you the whole thing leans. Come with me and leave behind the noisy crowd. Sunlight shines for us above the clouds. Please don't tell
Putin and Barcelona soccer star Lionel Messi. The vast stash of records was obtained from an anonymous source by German daily Süddeutsche Zeitung and shared with global media partners including the UK's Guardian newspaper. Guardian journalist Luke Harding told Deutsche Welle that the political fallout will likely vary from country to country as the public learns how their leaders keep their personal fortunes out of the reach of tax authorities.
In countries which are democratic, these revelations are going to have a huge resonance. It's going to be very embarrassing. In others run by authoritarian regimes who have a pretty good grip on the media and on, you know, with a secret police, I don't think that will cause political change.
The leaked data from 1975 to the end of 2015 is being described as a never-before-seen view inside the world of offshore tax havens, and more revelations are expected in coming days.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.de. Next, Sputnik Radio. Afshin Ratansi interviewed Kristin Hrafnsson, co-founder of the Icelandic Center for Investigative Journalism. The topic was the Panama Papers and how and why the press is releasing information in the way they are. The papers are not searchable by the public like WikiLeaks releases are, and the press is being very selective on the release names of politicians who used offshore banking schemes. Sputnik Radio.
The Panama Papers. Edward Snowden, the whistleblower who has taken refuge in Russia from the threat of American torture, called it the biggest leak in the history of data journalism. But the Panama Papers were read only one way by UK partners of the Washington-based International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, which selectively disseminated the first revelations.
The documents from a law firm in Panama name close relatives of current and former Chinese leaders and associates of President Putin of Russia.
Yes, ICIJ affiliate the BBC used the millions of leaked documents to show support for David Cameron's policy on propagandizing against China and Russia. The Guardian was keen to use Panama leaks that supported British policy against Russia and China, even though Vladimir Putin's and Xi Jinping's names are not even in the leaked documents. Cameron's is, incidentally, at least that of his father. And the two British media organizations that published Panama leaks, The Guardian and the BBC, have been keen cheerleaders for Islamists fighting Assad of Syria. So no surprise that they were less interested in Panama revelations against US-backed autocrats of the Middle East, let alone the NATO-backed leader of post-coup d'etat, Ukraine. So who or what is the ICIJ, or International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, which got hold of the Panama Papers? We know it's funded by the Ford Foundation, the Carnegie Endowment, the Rockefellers, and George Soros, among others. It works with the Washington Post, owned by the founder of tax dodger Amazon.com. It also works with media organizations, including those of our next guest, Kristin Hrafnsson. He normally wears his WikiLeaks hat on this program, but he's also a director and co-founder of the Icelandic Center for Investigative Journalism, which has worked with the consortium. He joins me now via Skype from Reykjavik in Iceland. Kristin, thanks for coming back on the show. You've worked with both WikiLeaks and the ICIJ, the other one, the famous one. What did you make of the consortium saying, the boss of it saying, that the consortium is not WikiLeaks? They are trying to show that journalism can be done responsibly by, in effect, not releasing all the Panama Papers.
Well, I mean, they're doing two things totally different from WikiLeaks. And when they're saying that this is a irresponsible journalism, I totally disagree with the overall tone of that. I do have a sympathy towards sort of stalled releases. We certainly did that in WikiLeaks in 2010, 2011 on the diplomatic cables. And we were actually highly criticized for holding back the documents. But initially and in the end, the entire cache was put online on a searchable database. That is